The views and opinions expressed on the following program are not necessarily those of the staff and management of KLAY or those who advertise their products or services on this station.
And this has been a long time in coming, Tacoma. Welcome to Ask an Atheist, a weekly education call-in program dedicated to atheism, skeptical inquiry, and the separation of church and state. I'm your I'm your host for today, and your rather new host, Sam Mulvey. And with me are Mike Gillis. Say hello.
Hello.
And Casey Dorn.
Good to be here.
Good to be here. Like I said, this is a call-in program, and we are atheists. And if you would like to talk to us or ask us some questions, have some comments for us, you can give us a call at 253-584-1480. And this has been a long time in coming, like I said.
Yeah, this is something we've been working on for some time. We're actually coming over to you from Seattle. Public access.
We have.
We were a television program for the past 6 months, and we are moving into commercial radio now.
Right. We were too hot for TV.
way too hot for TV. So our topic for today is going to be, since this is a sort of a new medium for us and there's new stuff going on, we're actually going to talk about what an atheist is and why we actually have a show. But before we get into that, we should probably discuss some news. This is something we do every show.
No, we should talk about being an atheist, I think.
Yeah, oh, okay. I think it's before we get anywhere, I think important that people actually know what that word means. Who are these people?
Yeah, because I'm not really sure.
Fair point.
Yeah, I think Casey needs to know who he is. I think that before we start with anything, I think it's extremely important to get terminology straight.
Terminology is important.
I mean, it's the basis of language, first of all. I mean, atheist is a word that gets thrown around a lot, like a lot of other words, and it's important that people know what we mean when we say we're atheists.
Indeed.
So let's get to the root of that word. What is an atheist? Let's dissect it. Atheist, I think that's the root of the word, is theist. Theist, of course, being somebody who believes in deities or gods.
Right.
Not just the God of the Bible. That's just one of many that people worship and have worshipped from history. We're talking about Zeus, Ares, Allah, Krishna, Odin, Thor, Zoroaster, Gozer the Gozerian, Zardoz, Frith, you know, whatever your flavor.
Sure.
If you believe in any of these beings exist or one of many others, you're a theist. That's simply the definition. Back to the word atheist. Atheist with that A at the beginning. That's the most important part of the word atheist. Much as the word atypical means not typical, asymmetrical means not symmetrical, atheist simply just means not a theist.
Indeed. And in some discussions, people have extended the atheism definition to even theism or atheism about specific gods. Like, everyone's an atheist about Zeus these days. Well, most people are atheists about Zeus.
I wait for the angry letter from somebody who still believes in the Greek pantheon. But
if you'd like to discuss that with us, again, the phone number is 253-584-1480. Or if you'd like to send an email to us, you can go to our website at www.askanatheist.tv and click the big red button.
The candy-like button.
The beautiful, shiny candy-like button.
I was going to say, it is confusing, and the best definition that I've heard so far is that if you ask the question someone, do you believe in God, if they say any question other than yes, including I don't know, that means you're an atheist.
So, absolutely.
And simplest,
And that's the interesting thing, because then we get into the other definition. Doesn't I don't know mean agnostic? Yes, it does. And here's the really interesting part. Atheism and agnosticism, not mutually exclusive.
True.
For instance, the atheist and theist dichotomy, that's about belief. We're talking about what do you believe. Do you believe a God exists?
Mm-hmm.
I would say no. I don't have that belief.
Right.
And the Gnosticism-agnosticism dichotomy is about knowledge. Do I know that God exists?
Right.
I would also say no.
Yeah, I like to say, atheism is an operational definition. How do I act in life?
Right.
Agnosticism, this is something I got from you, Casey, is a statement of knowledge. What do I actually know?
Right. Yeah, and we're not pretending to know anything here. But based on the given evidence, I'm not convinced.
Yeah, it kind of all pivots on that, doesn't it? Right? It's a question of some people say, oh, well, you know, faith is enough, right? Well, for us, it's evidence, and faith is belief without evidence.
Exactly. And it's again, it comes down is we're not making a claim of 100% certainty here. We're not saying we absolutely know, you know, down pat, there is no, at any time, a deity. The same way I can't say with 100% certainty that the President of the United States, Barack Obama, is not a robot.
Oh, please, let's not get that started.
I see no compelling evidence that Obama is a robot. I see no evidence. I know enough in the small degree that I do about robotics and the current state of technology. I think it's a silly claim. Silly enough that I think that's going to need a lot of evidence to back it up. I mean, a lot of evidence. You have to give me some real hardcore proof of Robo Obama before I'm going to treat this like a serious this is not a serious claim. Again, the burden of proof is on that person making that claim, mm-hmm. not the skeptic. So if somebody made the Robo Obama claim, they're the one that has the job of proving it.
I think it's interesting about the burden of proof thing because I think someone who feels kind of threatened by the fact that there's someone saying, no, I don't believe he exists, they'll say, well, prove that he doesn't. Obviously, we know that if you're testing claims about anything mundane to grandiose, the person saying, I believe this exists is the person that really has to justify themselves. And I think there might be a disconnect for Americans, especially Christians that are Americans, because for them it was kind of their default position because most people are Christians because they grew up with their parents being Christians.
Yeah,
as the truth of basically every other person who's religious on this planet, most of them grew up in that religion. So
yeah, that the popular position is not necessarily the default position.
Right. Correct.
Like, for instance, if I were to make a claim right now that I could fly, like Superman, that if I concentrated or perhaps even had a happy thought, that I could levitate out of my chair and fly out of the studio window, sure. Possibly second star to the right and straight on till morning. If I were to make that claim on the radio right now, no one is under any pressure whatsoever to believe that claim. I can't simply say, prove that I can't. My job is, of course, to make the proof, to provide the evidence that I can actually make that claim. I'm not flying until proven, not movable, That's not how that works.
Right.
So I think that's what it goes for with God for most people who call themselves atheists. Theists are making a really big claim. They're not just making a claim about a robot president or about a flying person. They're making a claim about an all-powerful, generally all-powerful, omnipotent, perfect being that controls every aspect of the universe.
Yeah, they're making a claim that covers the entire state of the entire universe. So,
as Carl Sagan often said, incredible claims or extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence. And I think that it's really important for people to realize that, yes, that is actually a very big claim. Just because it, as Casey said, is one that people grew up with, doesn't mean that it's one that isn't extraordinary. And I would say, ask yourself this question. How different would the world be if this claim were true versus whether this claim were false?
That works sometimes, but not all of the time, as a lot of people have some ideas about the state of the universe from a sort of an unseen perspective, and sort of the dualist nature of the universe, where if without God there is no love and stuff like that. So you have to be careful with that test and make sure that you're working with observable data and not assumed data.
I think it's also worth mentioning when you bring in the without God there is no love, they're actually making a second claim.
That's true.
So in a lot of ways, and this is what happens when we get into a lot of debates with religious believers, is we end up sometimes having to stop the debate and observe every single piece of the debate one by one. Mm-hmm. That otherwise sometimes claims can be piled on top of claims, when I think it's really important to sort of stop and slow down and look at the first foundation of that argument and say, let's look at this first before we put anything on top of it.
Right.
And if you want to put something on top of that, the number is 253-584-1480. We want to hear what you have to say. You're a brand new audience to us, and so...
Absolutely brand new audience. Yes. And speaking of which, we do have a message, if not a phone call, from Chad from Tacoma, called to say congrats on our first show.
Oh, all right. Thank you, Chad.
Our first pat on the back.
Indeed.
It's indeed good to have that. I think another thing that's really interesting to make about a lot of the God claims that I know that the three of us at least have found very unsatisfying is that they're generally subjective, and a lot of the arguments used about them are subjective, meaning that they're necessarily first-person arguments rather than something that a second person can come in or a third person to observe and explore.
The God is a feeling sort of idea, right?
Or God is a singular experience, and they require me to take their word for it.
This was something that happened to us a lot on the TV show as well, is that occasionally we get a phone call coming in. I think my favorite was when we got one phone call from one fellow who tried to describe God as, using some research he read in a magazine, as a brain state, as something that happened to you, that some oxytocin was released and then God showed up, and that feeling was, that physiological effect was God. And that's just changing the definition of God into, I don't know many theologians who would agree with that particular definition.
Right. But. Yeah, I think it's worth mentioning that generally speaking, even if you say God is love, when most theists use the word God, they're not just talking about a synonym for that word.
No.
Right.
They're talking about something more than that. So proving the existence of that one thing doesn't prove your argument. It just proves the existence of that one thing.
Wait a minute. Are you trying to tell me that just because the tides go up and the tides go down and there's no argument about it, that means God must exist?
That proves that the moon exists.
15 minutes in. I was wondering when that would get referenced.
Oh, we love you, Bill O. We do.
Oh, Bill O'Reilly. You need to learn about the moon.
The moon.
Moons, how do they work?
Yeah.
reference backed by a reference. All right.
I think it's also worth mentioning that a lot of times what you get is we get a lot of non-falsifiable claims. And what do I mean by non-falsifiable? I mean that, for instance, let's just say I'm investigating a claim that, say, like, the moon is made out of cheese. There are ways to prove that claim wrong. One is I know certain things about cheese, and I can gather a moon rock and put it under the microscope. I can test it for calcium. I can test it for any of the other things I would test to take down to the lab and go, yep, this is a hunk of cheese.
Yeah.
And that's what falsifiable is I give myself an out to say, okay, let's assume for a second that this claim is wrong. Let's make sure it's not that first, and then let's narrow things down and come up with the best possible current answer.
Okay.
And a lot of times religious claims are not that. They're sort of intangible. They sort of dodge investigation the way that Keanu Reeves dodges bullets in The Matrix, where they specifically make themselves intangible to the degree that you can't really even question it or look into it.
Sure.
That you have to first believe it before you can find out if it's true or not, and that's not the way to investigate anything. A priori knowledge is kind of worthless.
Right.
Right.
So I think that when you get down to it, it really comes down to faith-based claims. And I'm going to sort of toss it out there, and this is not going to make a lot of people happy. Let's be honest about what is faith. Faith is generally pretending to know what either nobody knows or pretending to know that what we know is already wrong.
Right.
That
isn't also a component of that being faithful about something is not caring about having any evidence for it. I mean, yes, beliefs are pretending to know. I mean, that would be the way in which I would classify the difference between a belief and knowledge.
I actually do prefer that definition myself, where faith is something evidence irrelevant rather than anti or ignorant of evidence, is where any evidence that comes in, when you've made a decision based on faith, as far as you're concerned, the argument is irretrievably over. If somebody comes up with evidence supporting or denying your claim, it doesn't really change your belief. You now believe this based on something that is not based on the evidence.
That there isn't a cause-effect definition or relationship between what you believe and why. The why is irrelevant. And that's what I mean about pretending to know what you don't really know, which is that connection between reality that can be observed and independently verified is in no way connected to what you're talking about and what you believe. And that if you severed that connection between even the circumstantial evidence that religious believers like to bring up, if I debunked the stated reason that they sometimes give, they would simply find another one. And it's sort of a logic heart bypass. They would simply find a new path to connect this to something. And that's where faith comes in, is it basically says, I know. And nobody really makes faith-based claims unless there is a lack of knowledge in some way. I mean, yeah. Nobody says, I have faith that, say, like Barack Obama, again, is president of the United States. There are ways to test this, not only because he's on TV all the time.
That is funny, too. I mean, a while ago, you and I actually did a program on this show called Spiritual is a Nonsense Word, and we were kind of trying to deconstruct the ways in which the words we use, at least in America, to sort of talk about religion or religious experience. And I was just reading a blog post, I don't remember where it was, where they were saying that the word faith has replaced religion. And that's, you know, we have faith-based initiatives. And, you know, you go into any newspaper in any city, you've got a, you know,
person of faith.
Yeah, or they have like the faith column or something like that. So we've actually, maybe people are just burnt out a little bit on the idea of a religious institution, but we've just sort of substituted a synonym. So faith is not only sort of this thing that that believers would use to say, oh, faith, I don't need to read out in a book. I just feel it in my heart.
And maybe this is something we can get back to after the break.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of people like to say atheism, like anything else, is just another faith.
Right.
They like to count atheism among the faiths. And this is something I get a lot when I'm out socially and stuff like that. I'll be having a drink and sitting down, and I'm known in my community as an atheist, and then somebody who's interested will come up to us and say, well, your atheism, just like anything else, is a religion. And like I said, we can probably get to that after the break.
So, yes, you're listening to Ask an Atheist on KLAY 1180.
Yeah. And yeah, I seem to have forgotten how a CD player works, strangely enough.
Usually it's too many iPods these days.
Yeah.
If it doesn't have the little circular wheel, it somehow loses it.
Yep. All right, see you in a bit.
Bye.
Welcome back to Ask an Atheist on KLAY 1180 Tacoma. And our subject for today is, what is an atheist? What is atheism? And what is it not? And why we have a show? But before we get back to that, we should talk about a segment we do called Countdown to Backpedaling.
Dun, dun, dun.
this is a thing, like about a month ago now, I believe. An organization called Family Radio, which is a Christian fundamentalist organization, started a series of billboards. I don't believe any are in Washington, but they're appearing all over the place, in places like Puerto Rico, saying that Jesus is returning on May 21st.
That's soon.
Yeah, look busy, everybody.
Look busy, with the world ending in October. And so they have a countdown going, and they're doing billboards, and we've started a countdown of our own called Countdown to Backpedaling.
Yeah, it was a good one, Mike. It was very good.
I think what we're really looking down to is that I don't think any of us are convinced that Jesus is returning on the 21st of May.
Well, certainly I'm not.
I'm not. I'm certainly not going to make this really high on my list. But something wonderful is going to happen the day after, which is that we're going to get this organization's reaction to his absence.
Right.
We don't know what they're going to do. There are the couple things we could sort of pull out of thin air, like they could simply just pull up stakes, shut down their website, and crawl under a rock.
Which would be the least interesting of our options.
Yeah,
they would run away. Then there's the my favorite, which is, as we who play video games know, sorry, Mario. Jesus is in another castle.
Yes.
That he did return, and he's hiding somewhere, and we just haven't become aware of him. Or, better yet, we did something, and he doesn't want to come out of his room.
Indeed. And that would be, I think, one of the more interesting options.
Right.
But they
persevered, you know, right?
We have to know, but it's 132 days. So Family Radio is not going to be able to simply scurry away and just pretend this didn't happen. We want other people to check out our website, wecantknow.com.
Indeed. And you'll note, if you look at the countdown, we are actually counting down till May 22nd, the day after, so that we'll have some idea of when the backpedaling begins.
You know, I've always wondered about that, Sam. I've always wondered, when you put the sort of a time clock, a ticking time clock on the apocalypse, what time zone is it? Is it Judea? Is it local Judea local time?
I don't know, Casey. It's weird. They usually are not.
It's Greenwich Mean Time. It's totally Greenwich Mean Time.
They're usually not that specific as to actually put a date on it, especially not a date within the near future. But this is not a new thing. This is something that has been done. Technically, we've been living in the end times since the beginning times.
Yeah.
That this is no... This
At
is
least
nothing.
In that particular mythology.
In that particular mythology, we're always on the verge of the end of the world, and that's why anytime there's any sort of unrest in the Middle East, they bring on someone like Pat Robertson or Hal Lindsey onto CNN or whatever news station to basically read the tea leaves and say what Jesus has to say.
Well, being that the question was posed to me and being the kind of person I am, I went with UTC, Greenwich or Greenwich Mean Time.
Well, if your server runs on that time, then by God, God runs on that time too. Jesus does.
Well, before we get back to our topic, we actually do have a call. We should probably take it. So I believe this is Chad from Tacoma. Are you with us?
What's up?
Hey, how are you?
I am splendid.
What have you got for us today, Chad?
What's that?
What have you got for us today?
What do I got for us? Well, I'm fixing my vacuum cleaner, hanging out, listening to you guys. Congratulations for being on the radio and rocking it.
Thank you.
You know, the end times, it's a fantastic device, you know, to keep people in. It should be a feature of any good religion.
It does seem to be the religious equivalent of short selling to me.
It's great. And, you know, it bands people together and makes them a little, you know, the more they buy it, the more differently they have an excuse to act. Because think about it, you know what I mean? If you're going to adopt, you know, a set of beliefs that that make you behave differently and want to be no part of the world and all that, that's fine and good. If you believe that people who don't think believe the way that you do are going to burn in hell forever and are morally inferior or just lost, you know, depending on how you want to swing it, that's all good. But all that stuff becomes very uncomfortable until you're sold on the fact that this is all going to go away in a very short time.
Well, I think,
you know what I mean? Like that.
I think I would take out a loan for about $500,000. If it were me.
Sure.
I'd buy a boat. I'd go around the world, you know. I'll screw anything that moves, you know. I don't want to get more holy. I want to get less holy.
It is kind of one of the odd juxtapositions is the world is going to end. Everything that's interesting to you is going to cease, but don't touch any of it because that would be bad.
Well, you only have to hold out so much longer because God is going to give it all to you. Oh, yeah.
But any minute now.
70 virgins are on the other side. It's all good.
Yeah.
All good. But don't look at a woman's face in this world. Don't you dare.
We won't. Don't worry.
In 1975, man, the Witnesses had their biggest end of days false prediction. And there was a lot of that, like mortgaging of houses and stuff. It was a big deal. I wasn't around. I grew up a Jehovah's Witness, so I heard some stories about it, you know, from family and how crazy it was. And for those who still wanted to be a witness, you know, who you know wrote it through, it was like a cautionary tale, you know, so to speak. Like we learned as you know, as disciples of God, you know. So, but that's backpedaling.
I've noticed to the website that we have gotten links to the website from Jehovah's Witnesses forums filled with both Jehovah's Witnesses and ex-Jehovah's Witnesses, and they're all like, yeah, somebody started the countdown again. These weird atheist guys have a joke going for it. But
and witnesses are a little bit more likely to adopt the dogmatic position that we can't know.
Yeah.
You know, but that it's still coming.
It's still coming.
We can't know because it's not coming.
Yeah. Chad, thank you for your call, and thank you for discussing sort of your view of the countdown to backpedaling and your little and the stuff about the Jehovah's Witnesses. You have a good day.
Yeah, cheers, man. Thanks.
And you'll notice that, if I remember the statistics correct, there was actually a jump in Jehovah's Witness sort of membership after the end of the world. And
That seems kind of backwards. I mean, imagine if I were a financial advisor and I told everyone to buy stocks in huge numbers in 1929.
Enron stock,
WorldCom. And there was a huge crash. Why would people want to sign on with my advice?
Right.
It seems like if there were more money involved, if like I was picking horses for somebody.
Maybe it's the buy low, sell high thing.
Perhaps.
You know, you're buying at the lowest possible point of Jehovah's Witnesses.
I don't like
you're getting more for your money. I don't know.
Sort of the market of religions. you know, we should probably get back to the topic. And when we went into the break discussing the long-held belief that atheism, especially atheism today and being described as new atheism, is a religion.
Mm-hmm.
Casey, have you encountered that? Or?
Oh, I mean, I would say of the common sort of throwback sort of when someone knows you're an atheist, I mean, I think the first canard is, well, then you believe in nothing. I think... Yeah, you have just as much faith to be an atheist to say that God doesn't exist as you would if you were a theist and believe that he was. I mean, I often think about the Bertrand Russell's teapot analogy. That's the one that I love. I think it's elegant. And you know, he said, imagine you're having a conversation with someone, and you said, okay, there's this teapot that's floating in orbit of the moon, except that in the orbit that it is, it always faces the moon is always between us and the teapot, so we can actually never see it from a telescope. And let's just imagine we're in a world before satellites and rockets. And Bertrand Russell says, are you inclined to believe me that this teapot exists? Even though it's impossible to see with the naked eye, we can't see it with a telescope, there's no way you could ever confirm it was there, and you only have my belief. The impulse to not believe that it's there is in of itself not an act of faith, because right. you don't have any evidence. It is simply just the lack of belief.
Yeah, and it comes down to the flying man thing, or simply ask yourself this. Does it take more faith to disbelieve claims made about UFOs or Bigfoot than it does to believe them? I would say that faith requires you to actually have to jump past some kind of mental barrier of some kind.
Mm-hmm.
That faith, if it was something that was easy, I think that it would be something. Like, it doesn't take a lot for me to go, yeah, I don't exactly believe that. It's like, do I believe that Barack Obama's a robot again?
Sure.
No, until I will reevaluate this claim once you guys make some better arguments.
And there's a bunch of sayings on the internet as well. That we've used, that, you know, bald is not a hair color,
right.
and things like that.
Not collecting stamps is not a hobby.
And we've been talking for roughly half an hour about, and this is what my kind of thing is my take on the view of atheism. And this is something that most people who are not atheists aren't really used to, is that for me, and this is what I've said this several times in the show, I've said this on other shows and in interviews, atheism for me has two words in its definition: no God.
Mm-hmm.
Atheists have other ideas as well. Atheists have ideas about politics. Atheists have ideas about sociology. Atheists have ideas about cooking. And I've got some ideas on cooking, let me tell you. However, every time we step off that two-word definition, every time we move beyond that, and we will move beyond that during the course of this show, we are now not really talking about atheism anymore. We'll be talking about many different philosophies in the course of this show. Coming up soon, we do have a show on humanism, which some people do use as... fulfilling some of the ideas, sort of as a basis for morality in replacement of religion.
Hmm.
And speaking of morality, we actually have another call. This would be Tiona from Texas. How are you today?
Hello?
Hello.
Hello. Welcome to Ask an Atheist. What have you got for us today?
The guy who was on before said about how religious people think we have inferior morals. I had a guy once tell me that I had no moral compass whatsoever as an atheist, and he also told me that Hitler had a moral compass, so I need to...
He certainly did.
Not a very good one,
yeah.
though.
No.
Well, how do I respond to that kind of thing?
Well, here's the idea. This is I think, the most succinct way to respond to what do atheists believe. I usually say, or where do your morals come from? For both of those questions, I usually say, the same place you do. Except that requires a little bit of unpacking, right? Because where we get our morals from, and where everyone ends up doing, is from their parents, from their society, from their experiences, the failures that they've had, all the ways in which a human being, as they grow to be a little child to an adult, find out what their behavior entails, what effects that has, and what is beneficial and what is not beneficial. And we can say, we can have these axioms, or we can say, you know, death is preferable. Life is preferable to death. You know,
pleasure is preferable to pain.
Right. We have these basic things, but essentially, for every human being on the planet, they learn their morals. They learn basically everything about how to behave ethically and morally in roughly the same way everyone else does, which is by trial and error. And that's not a very happy answer for people who want to say, no, I want to know objectively, where does it come from? Where's the one source for it? But that is it's hard.
Yeah, I think it's also interesting to note that I think a lot of times, and this is something that politicians fall back on a lot when they're trying to display their moral character, is they use religion as sort of a cut-paste alternative to actually having to show over time that they are moral. They simply just have to proclaim some kind of religious affiliation. It becomes kind of like Dumbo's magic feather, I think, for a lot of folks. That Dumbo, as you know in the movie, could fly, you know, it was an innate ability. Mm-hmm. And he basically gave this sort of ability over to this feather that he was given. It was basically, you know, a scam. But basically what this thing did is give him the... I guess you could say what is the word I'm looking for? Confidence.
Right.
To basically do what he could do already. And then in the end, when he loses a feather, he learns that he can fly anyways, that he, you know, already, that he never needed it to begin with. And I think that religion, for a lot of people, sort of takes this form, that the ability for them to be moral, those sorts of feelings that they have, that sense of empathy for other human beings in pain, the need to want to help other people, that was within them all the time. They just attributed it to this outside source.
And if I may add, I guess, a third note to make this a chord, starting with Casey and then Mike, is to me, I like to say, you know, morality is an emergent property of our tribal beginnings. There are things that we like without having to be told. I am alive. I wish to remain alive. I have stuff. I wish to continue having my stuff. And a lot of our laws and a lot of the other stuff that comes out of that is just an emergent quality of everybody wanting to remain alive, everybody wanting to keep their stuff, everybody wanting, you know, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, if I may quote a document.
Yeah. Well, Tiona, when you have these conversations, what do you try to hit back with? What's your sort of your instinctual sense of how to respond to that?
Well, like when people tell me I'm more complex, I'm actually kind of baffled because I'm one of those people that, all right, if you're having an intelligent conversation with me, I can keep up. But when you say something completely stupid, I'm just like, wait, what?
I encounter that frequently. Yeah. It's you know, things are going well. It's a back and forth, and then it ends. And
I think it's also worth noting that a lot of times when somebody throws those sorts of things at you, they're really not interested in a dialogue. And I think the important word of the word dialogue is the dia part, which means two. Yeah. Is that there's a conversation going back and forth. This is one of the reasons we have this show, is that we want to create that dialogue, that we're not simply open mic night for a religious believer to scream at us, because people who just want to scream at you aren't interested in a conversation. We want to know what they have to say about something, and we want to be able to have the opportunity to answer it.
For a long to build on what Mike said, for a long time before I actually considered myself an atheist and I was going around as an agnostic, and I come from an agnostic family, people would ask me what I am, and they'd say, well, what are you? And I'd say, I'm an atheist. And why would I say that? Because when I was an agnostic, I'd say so, and then I'd have to deal with 25 minutes of conversion.
Right,
because,
yeah.
Oh, you're a question.
You're on people, the fence.
Yeah, and going to atheism, starting to identify as an atheist, people are like, now, okay, I went from somebody to convert to somebody to an enemy, which I guess not as great, but in many ways, but it did at least let me get through my day. And then eventually I found myself more comfortable here.
Right.
And I've had people actually, like, in a more calmer, like in a classroom environment, somebody's actually said, like, well, how do you guys, like, get through life, like, you know, you don't have anything to look forward to in death, and I just kind of have to tell them, you know, I'm kind of accepting that I'm just going to die. It's not really a big deal for me. I'm not scared of it, but they don't seem to understand it that well.
Yeah, I think the one thing that I've really noticed, the difference between somebody who believes in an afterlife and somebody who doesn't, is that somebody who doesn't believes in death. That I don't think that when my heart and mind shut down that there's going to be a portion of my consciousness that goes on somewhere. And I think what I get out of that is it makes this life all that more valuable and important.
It is a dodge, but I like the quote from Mark Twain. I'm not worried about me dying. I was dead for thousands of years and didn't notice.
Yeah.
And so I hope that helps you out in your debate. Thank you for your call, Tiona.
Yeah, I think that...
Well, hold on a second. Just a reminder, you're listening to Ask an Atheist. If you'd like to talk to us, give us a call. It's 253-584-1480.
And we did get another call, but they decided they weren't ready to go on the air. So if you would like to talk to us and ask us a question, but you're not ready for the air...
Not ready for primetime.
You can go to askanatheist.tv and click the big red button, as well as see our back episodes and our podcast and any events that are going on.
Yeah, I think we should probably talk about, why do we have a show?
Yeah.
Why are we talking about the stuff that we don't believe in? Why do we feel it important to join this conversation? And I think that's an important thing to talk about, because I don't know of any other group that, when asked why they have a radio show or why they have an organization, that get asked this. And I think it's important because I think it's on a lot of people's minds.
Right.
I'd say that we have a show because we represent a viewpoint that just doesn't get a lot of a hearing in the mainstream media.
No, we don't.
I mean, sure,
and
you might...
And almost no political representation.
At all.
I think we have one person in the House of Legislature, I think.
Yeah, there's Pete Stark from California, but he'd been in office for I don't know how many terms before somebody just asked him. that he said, yes, I don't believe in any deities. That's one. There may be others, but there is that stigma, and that's another reason. But I'd say that we don't get much of a hearing in the media. Maybe you get a 2-minute segment with Richard Dawkins when he writes a new book, or there's a billboard campaign and the representative of an atheist organization goes on Bill O'Reilly and gets into a fight with him.
And they talk about tides.
They talk about tides, and Bill O'Reilly opens the door to his ignorance and lets it out. But you really can't compare that to having a long format show. That 2 minutes is such a narrow opportunity to be able to tell people what we believe. So that's really why we exist. So please, that's why we're here. We're putting ourselves out there.
Indeed. And when we are going to break soon, what the news tried to tell us. But there is a story I'd like to tell about that morality, just to get back to that, is it comes from a religious person, and they were in Arizona, and I lived in Arizona for a while. And somebody came up to they were in a conversation in the faculty lounge, and somebody said, "Well, I don't know how I feel about those atheists. They have no basis for their morality, and they have no reason to believe what they believe." And she's like, "Well, actually, I have a lot of respect for atheists because they have a morality and they're nice to us, and they have no reward for that."
Yeah.
That's nice.
Yeah.
That's nice.
I think that about sums it up for me.
But, okay, this is Ask an Atheist on KLAY 1180 Tacoma. And we're going to take another break. And we will get back to you shortly. Okay, we're back. This is Ask an Atheist on KLAY 1180 Tacoma. And we, as our inaugural show, we are talking about atheism, what it is, why it is, and why we've got a show. My name is Sam Mulvey, and with me is Mike Gillis. Hey.
Hey.
And Casey Doran.
Yo.
And you were just about to get into the why we have a show part.
Yeah, I think it's important. I think that atheists, of course, we know, based on a number of polls, it's hard to say how accurate this is because a lot of people are in the closet about their atheism, or at least there's a stigma to the word that they run away from. But based on the polls, we're about 5 to 20% of the American population.
Right.
And we're also one of the most misunderstood groups and misrepresented groups in the country. I'm not going to try to compare the prejudice that we face to that faced by gays and lesbians. Mm. Clearly, theirs is more visceral. It's going to lead to a lot more violent crimes. Mm-hmm. However, I think ours is more widespread. I think that the negative opinions and misrepresentations held about atheists, you're going to hear this from people that just shock the hell out of you.
Yeah.
People that describe themselves as tolerant. Give you a really quick example that I would have is that I just recently graduated from Green River Community College. And I took a gender studies class.
Congratulations, by the way.
Well, thank you. I took a gender studies class, and in that class, we were discussing a lot of the persecution faced by different sexual minorities, whether gay, intersex, transgendered. And everyone in this class, incredibly, incredibly liberal and tolerant, would dogpile on any potential accusation or story that we would tell that would sort of show this prejudice. We were also talking about something called double vision, the perception that you have where your own minority status gives you a certain sensitivity to persecution of other groups.
Right.
And as a heterosexual white male, I, Mike Gillis, only have my atheism. And when I mentioned that to the classroom, not as any sort of an anti-religion tirade, but just mentioning it, it immediately went quiet. I might as well have been passing the hat around asking for donations to Al-Qaeda.
And to build on that, I mean, to build on Mike's thing, is we do have a name for that, at least locally among us, is NPR ecumenicalism. Mm-hmm. NPR is always very good about pluralism of religions, unless you start talking about atheism itself.
Yeah.
In which case, we're the bad guys. I mean, they're one of the people, they love posting stories about new atheism. And when the new atheism is basically the old atheism, except we actually say we're atheists now.
Yeah, that the old atheism generally meant that we were just quietly polite when people said ridiculous things.
Right.
Now we've decided, and this show is really much a part of that, that we're no longer going to be silent and that there's a conversation going on, whether we join it or not, and that these things only turn against us when we remain silent.
Right. And I'll say one thing about the show, about what it's not. We're not evangelizing. We're not out there to try and make you an atheist. I said this the first time I was on the TV show, and I'm saying this now, is we like what Mike said, We're putting a voice out there. There is not a lot out there for atheism in the media, in the real media. There's stuff on the internet, and there's, you know, especially on YouTube, there's a huge quarter of atheists and stuff like that. And we're not talking to them. We're not talking to each other. We want to talk to you guys out there, and not to make you atheists, but to let you know that we're here, we're moral, we're friendly, we're just like everybody else.
And I think that's the important part, because, and I think this is the real power of the out movement in the gay community, mm-hmm. is that it was never an argument. It was never a specific set of facts that gets rid of homophobia. What it is actually knowing a gay person.
Yeah.
Having a gay neighbor, having a gay coworker. That's what erodes prejudice. And that's what we hope will erode prejudice here.
Yeah. And to build on that communication, we actually have a call. We have Henry from San Jose, California. And this, I believe, goes back to the discussion on morality. How are you doing? Hello?
Hi, guys.
Hi.
Before I ask my question, I just wanted to point out something. Why do you guys have a show? Well, on the schedule for your radio station, it looks like there's about 15 shows on Sunday that are all about Christianity or Judaism.
Yeah.
So one atheist show snuck in there at 3 o'clock isn't much to ask.
This is true here at KLAY, and this was also true at SCAN, is that it was religious programming, us, and then religious programming. And what we're hoping that does is we are inviting those religious people to have a discussion with us.
Exactly. And I think it's also worth mentioning that while our goal is not to reach out to atheists or to speak directly to atheists, we do want atheists to listen to the show as well.
Absolutely.
When I stood up there and mentioned to my gender studies class that I was an atheist and that was the prism through which I saw other people being persecuted because I knew what it felt like to be excluded, and people went silent and stared at their shoes. After that class, I was approached by about three of my classmates who were happy that I had said something.
Yes.
They were happy that I had mentioned. They came out to me as atheists.
And sort of the vindication for the show for me came for yet a different call on a TV episode when somebody came on the line excoriating Richard Dawkins. And we're trying to figure out what Richard Dawkins did to make this guy so angry. And it turns out it was Dawkins' quote-unquote appearance on South Park was his single point of data.
Yeah. And it kind of comes down to what a lot of people do, which is instead of having their own analysis, instead of saying, well, people are angry at Richard Dawkins, let me go check out to see what Richard Dawkins has to say. Instead, a lot of people, and this is the case with atheists, is they tend to take somebody else's word for it.
Right.
And it's usually a biased source. Clearly, a religion is not going to say necessarily nice things about atheists in the same way you shouldn't expect Pepsi to say nice things about Coke.
So, Henry, you had a point about atheist morality, did you not?
Yes, I did, although you guys just brought up something that gave me another thought, which is I used to attend a Unitarian Universalist church.
Right on.
And I was out as an atheist. I would participate in the services every once in a while. And I was amazed at how often, after the service, people who would come up to me and say, man, you know, it's amazing that you're able to just be so honest and open about being an atheist because I feel really uncomfortable. And I'm thinking, this is at a Unitarian Universalist church.
Yeah.
So, you know, even a more friendly environment than a liberal community college.
Right, absolutely. We actually
have
a solstice dinner up in Seattle every year. At a Unitarian church. And so it's very weird. The Unitarian churches seem to divide along sort of the old lines where it was very, you know, plural. And then I guess in the Unitarian Universalists, there's sort of a return to Jesus movement, and those are significantly less friendly to atheists.
Absolutely. It is that split, because Unitarian Universalist was, of course, the joining of the Unitarians and the Universalists, and it looks like the Unitarian side of that is really pushing the return to Jesus thing, becoming more overtly Christian rather than, in a lot of ways, a pluralistic church.
Yeah.
Which is the sort of the guise that they've taken in the recent decades.
Although that's a lot on the East Coast is a lot of the Jesus stuff, but, you know, a lot of the churches find that they start to get a little bit stale when they get too uncomfortable about spiritualism, talking about God. So they a lot of them have brought it back in to try to, you know, make things more interesting and boost membership. My question was, what you guys think about the position that actually atheists are the only people that can be moral, in that you know, we don't have a reward or a fear of punishment behind our morality. We're being moral because it's the right thing to do. It's good for goodness sake.
I will be happy to take accolades that I am a moral person despite any reward in the afterlife, but I'm really hesitant to say that
it's the only path.
It's the only path, and that religious people are not moral because they do have that reward, mainly because I do believe they get the same reward I do. And
that might actually draw a pretty interesting philosophical question, which is if you do something solely because, or if not solely because, primarily because you think there is going to be a reward for doing it, should you get credit for doing something moral?
Well, I think it's important.
Does your justification for it matter as to what you do?
I think the justification is all about it. I think that if you were really to look at most of the actions, both moral and immoral, made by religious and non-religious people, these sorts of questions of, oh my God, does this match up with what Jesus says? I don't think that goes through a lot of people's heads. I think there's an immediate emotional reaction that's built on the foundation of all these experiences and all of this upbringing that we've had.
And the fact of the matter is, I do believe I get a reward. I believe that I act in a moral way, other people will act morally as well, and I benefit. I specifically benefit. I mean, maybe sometimes in the general sense that everybody benefits, but if I'm moral and people are moral to me, people like me, I get friends, and my stuff doesn't get stolen when I invite people over. So I do think there is a reward for being moral beyond the afterlife. Henry, I want to thank you for your call, but we're starting to approach the end of the show. You have a good day.
Thank you.
Thanks, Henry.
And again, if you would like to talk to us even beyond our hour-long program, you can see us online at askanatheist.tv. We have a podcast of this show and all our previous shows, as well as video and events and interesting stuff there as well. I do want to take a moment to thank everyone who helped us get here.
There's a lot of people to thank.
There's a lot of people. I don't have the full list. The full list is coming. We're still assembling it. The list practically doubled yesterday when we had a 24-hour online mini telethon.
Yeah, that was actually incredible. By the way, that was really incredible.
Oh, I felt it this morning.
I felt it last night when I woke up, and this morning when I woke up again. Yeah, I was like, wow, I can't believe I did that. That was one of the weirdest things I'd ever done. And this is the kind of stuff that we do online. And we did this to help us sort of get the show started and to build advertisers. And we would not be here if it weren't for them. I haven't done the full accounting yet, but we received donations from, I believe, like 12 countries, 14. It was a large number of countries all over the place. And you'll notice the phone calls we're getting today, one in Tacoma, one in Texas, one in San Jose, is you're hearing this in Tacoma, but we're going to be talking to people all over the place.
Yeah, we've actually gotten phone calls from even Tehran at some point, Argentina.
Yeah.
And I think that really speaks to the fact that there aren't a lot of shows like this. That, yes, there are things like the 700 Club and Way of the Master, not just shows, but entire networks made of entirely religious programming. And there is a hole for us to fill, so to speak.
There is.
And you can see that there's an immediate reaction to us filling that hole.
Right. And if you would actually like to talk to us in person, if you'd like to meet up with us, this is a tradition that we had in Seattle, and we are continuing down here in Tacoma. And I am from Tacoma. And this is one of the places I go to.
You're a taco man.
I'm a taco man.
I love that.
You can actually meet up with us for dinner at 5 p.m. at Doyle's Public House at 208 St. Helens Avenue. And that is pretty near downtown Tacoma. Feel free to meet us there. Come on by, have a chat. But let's keep it friendly, because we want to be friendly and we don't want to yell and scream.
And Doyle's wouldn't like it if we did.
No, they would not.
Yeah, don't mess with Doyle. That guy's got brass knuckles.
Ow. Do we want to be making charges like that? I'm not sure.
Yeah, we should have a disclaimer, which you just said, you know, anything not about religion is a lie or sarcasm.
Yeah.
Anything about religion is a good... I'd keep going. I lost it. Well, we had some news stories lined up here, and I guess the question is, we don't have enough time to do all of them, so do we just want to do one of them? What do you want to do?
I think we could shotgun through them really fast.
All right.
We have a segment we like to call The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, where we look at what's going on in belief in the world. Casey, what do you got for good?
This is BBC News of December 21st. UN restores gay clause to killings resolution. UN member states have voted to restore a controversial reference to sexual orientation in a resolution against the unjustified killing of minority groups. The clause had been removed after pressure from some Arab and African member states, but the U.S. had pushed to have it reinstated. Quote, this is from Boris Dittrich of Human Rights Watch, countries that tried to roll back crucial protections for gay and lesbian people have been defeated. Obviously a victory for all of us.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And the interesting part is the U.S. ambassador to the U.N., Susan Rice, also welcomed the adoption of the amended resolution, saying it sent a, quote, clear and resounding message, unquote, that justice and human rights apply to all individuals. And here's the really the disturbing stuff is that but ahead of the vote, Zimbabwe's ambassador to the UN, Chitsaka Chipaziwa, attacked the U.S. amendment, saying there was no need to refer explicitly to sexual orientation. Quote, we will not have it foisted on us, unquote, he said, according to Reuters. Quote, we cannot accept this, especially if it entails accepting such practices as bestiality, pedophilia, and those other practices many societies would find abhorrent in their value systems.
Which is their go-to. I don't have much to add to this other than good job, UN, for one.
Yeah good job, UN. This is the bad. Mandatory army survey says atheists are unfit to be soldiers. This comes from the blog of a Sergeant Justin Griffith at Fort Bragg, North Carolina. He was actually forced to take a soldier fitness tracker. This is a mandatory survey that he was forced to take, judging him in four areas: emotional, social, family, and spiritual. He took the test and found out that under the spiritual, he didn't meet the criteria.
Right. He actually scored really high in all the other three categories.
Yeah, so, and it's a place where they were asking him sorts of questions on whether he believes in a higher power, whether he considers himself a spiritual person. This is not the job of the federal government. This is not the job of the military. Atheist soldiers serve honorably, and they serve with distinction. They are not unfit because they don't have a military.
And down here in Tacoma, Atheists, which is one of the local organizations, we do have people who work on the base, and a lot of people who are in the military are within the range of this station. And if you do have an opinion about that, we would love to hear it. And that is something we definitely are planning on addressing. And then the final one, which is the ugly, or in this case, the funny. This comes to us from the Atlantic Wire. Kentucky Creationist Museum to feature dragons, unicorns.
Yes.
Kentucky's state-backed $150 million creationist theme park, the Ark Encounter, will allow visitors to explore a literal interpretation of the Bible story of Noah and the Ark. But synonymous liberal Kentucky blogger, Media Check, spelled like Czechoslovakian, raises two important questions. What about that interpretation and how will it manifest in the theme park form? First, will there be dinosaurs on the original Ark?
Of course.
And second, what about unicorns? Now the blogger has found answers to both questions at Answers in Genesis, the official blog of the group behind the Ark Encounter. The group says yes to both.
Yay. Really, folks? Unicorns?
Here's their position on biblical unicorns. The biblical unicorn was a real animal, not an imaginary creature. The absence of a unicorn in the modern world should not cause us to doubt its past existence.
I wonder what unicorn is in Greek. Or Aramaic, for that matter. Or Hebrew.
Yeah, who knows? I mean, there are those people who kind of touch on the soft spots on a goat's head to make a unicorn. I know about that.
We got narwhals and rhinos.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what happens. This is something the atheists like to talk about on the internet a lot, is that creationist theme park. There's a lot of stuff about that, and a lot of
dinosaurs with
saddles.
Well, the picture of Jesus holding a baby velociraptor is now, I think, it's priceless. It's an institution.
Yep, and that's, I think, going to be our show. Ask an Atheist is a production of NEDM Media and recorded live at KLEY Studios in Lakewood, Washington. Our digital director was Paul Case. Our call screener was Rebecca Friedman. My name is Sam Mulvey, and my co-hosts this week were Mike Gillis and Casey Doran.
Take it easy.
And you guys can catch us online at askanatheist.tv. Feel free to hit the big red button and ask us a question.
Stay godless.